It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We're talking this hour about SunTrust Park. That's the new home for the Atlanta Braves. And the first exhibition game happens this Friday at the park. When we watch baseball now, it's hard to imagine teams being segregated by race. But there was a time when Atlanta had two baseball teams for black and white players. The teams were called the Atlanta Black Crackers and the Atlanta White Crackers. James Red Moore was believed to be the last surviving member of the Atlanta Black Crackers up until his death last year at the age of 99. Here he is speaking during a panel discussion at Georgia Perimeter College.
We played for the love of the game, you understand that? It was still, we didn't make any money, but we were what you call the trailblazers or the catalysts, pioneers for all these our black ball players.
The integration of professional baseball goes back to something called a gentleman's agreement. Atlanta playwright Kerwin Sims wrote a play by that name focused on the history of the Negro Leagues. I talked with him in 2015. He began by explaining what a gentleman's agreement means.
There was an agreement to bar African-American players from playing in the majors. Now, the way to the majors was through the minor league. The International League was the top minor league, which players had to come through in order to get to the majors at that time.
Can I stop you for just a second? To say that they had to take an action to bar African-American players suggests that some players were getting through. Was there the case that some black players were playing and they were taking action to say no, no more?
Well, what happened was this. There were a few. Moses Fleetwood Walker was one. Matter of fact, he was the first African-American player in the majors at that time. But there was a lot of dissension. You got to remember, at that time, the Civil War had just ended. There was a lot of dissension against blacks at that point. And a lot of the players, a lot of the owners of baseball teams, a lot of the players did not want to play with black players. So there was a movement, if you will, to disbar players. Many of them had arguments. Many of them refused to take pictures. Many of them, pitchers, refused to take signals, did not want to throw a ball that a black player could possibly hit as a home run. So there was a lot of dissension. The International League decided, we're going to stop this because there's too much grumbling. We're the top league. We're going to stop this. So they put an agreement in place, a verbal agreement. It wasn't
nothing
written,
in writing.
Nothing in writing. We put a verbal agreement, shook hands, and said we are not going to accept any more black players. The ones that are in, it was only a handful, would allow to complete the season, and after that, they would not renew their contracts.
But were there any African Americans present at that agreement?
No, that was an agreement that took place in Buffalo, New York, at the Genesee House, and it was between the International League owners, and that's what they decided. And when they left that room that day, that was it. Baseball had officially drawn the color line.
So your play kind of digs into that sort of the emotion that players had, especially Negro Leagues players, and which gave even more significance to Jackie Robinson's. Why did you choose that?
You know, there was no story, at least from a theatrical standpoint, that really dealt with some of the issues that we talk about. So we back up really to about 1868.
Just after the Civil War ends.
Right,
yeah.
Just after. And we talk about, and we kind of begin the story with Octavius V. Cato, whose father, by the way, was a former slave. And he co-founded the Philadelphia Pythians Baseball Club. And that's the first baseball club in America, African-American baseball club. And they, by the way, Celeste, was the first team that was barred. I got to remember, at that point, baseball is still an amateur sport.
Yeah.
It's an amateur sport. So that, and you weren't a member of an association as an individual, you were a member as a team. And that team, the Philadelphia Pythians, were disbarred. Later, the entire black race was disbarred after the International League decided that they wouldn't allow any more black players. So that came about 10, 15 years later.
And I mean, it's one of the reasons it's good dramatic fodder for a playwright is because there's so much emotion. And I wonder why you think that is for baseball. I mean, for example, most people can't remember the first African-American in the NFL. It was Kenny Washington. Most people can't remember the first black American in the NBA. That was Earl Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
But we remember Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, because he's probably the most and that's what baseball, that's the good face of baseball. And baseball has done a lot of great things. And that's really where they said, listen, what we've done in the past is not a great thing. And we move forward with Jackie Robinson. And that's really where a lot of people believe the history began. But what we want to do is make sure that a lot of those names, a lot of the people whose shoulders Jackie Robinson stood on are not forgotten. And many of them has. For example, Gus Greenlee. After the National League disbanded, he came along, and it was his intention to make the most powerful team in baseball, the Pittsburgh Crawfords. And he did a wonderful job. He was a bar owner in Pittsburgh. Very interesting story. And through his financing, he built his own stadium. At that point, black teams had to rent stadiums. And there were a lot of owners that made a lot of money renting to black players because they had nowhere else to play. You had to go through a stadium, through one of them, booking agents in order to play your game. So it was a very interesting story.
That was Atlanta playwright Kerwin Sims. He wrote a play called A Gentleman's Agreement. It tells the story of segregated professional baseball. The story of the Negro League is fascinating, especially when you hear it in the player's own words. Jackie Robinson wrote an essay in 1951 and recorded it for This I Believe. That's the radio series hosted by legendary journalist Edward R. Murrow. In it, Robinson recalls the year after he joined the major leagues.
About a year later, I went to Atlanta, Georgia to play in an exhibition game. On the field for the first time in Atlanta, there were Negroes and whites, other Negroes besides me. And I thought, what I had always believed has come to be. And what is it that I have always believed? First, that imperfections are human, but that wherever human beings were given room to breathe and time to think, those imperfections would disappear no matter how slowly. I do not believe that we have found or even approached perfection. That is not necessarily in the scheme of human events. Handicaps, stumbling blocks, prejudices, all of these are imperfect. Yet, they have to be reckoned with because they are in the scheme of human events. Whatever obstacles I found made me fight all the harder, but it would have been impossible for me to fight at all except that I was sustained by the personal and deep-rooted belief that my fight had a chance. It had a chance because it took place in a free society. Not once was I forced to face and fight an immovable object. Not once was the situation so cast iron rigid that I had no chance at all. Free minds and human hearts were at work all around me, and so there was a probability of improvement. I look at my children now, and I know that I must still prepare them to meet obstacles and prejudices, but I can tell them, too, that they will never face some of these prejudices because other people have gone before them. And to myself I can say, because progress is inalterable, many of today's dogmas will have vanished by the time they grow into adults. I can say to my children, there is a chance for you. No guarantee, but a chance. And this chance has come to be because there is nothing static with free people. There is no Middle Ages logic so strong that it can stop the human tide from flowing forward. I do not believe that every person in every walk of life can succeed in spite of any handicap. That would be perfection. But I do believe, and with every fiber in me, that what I was able to attain came to be because we put behind us, no matter how slowly, the dogmas of the past, to discover the truth of today and perhaps find the greatness of tomorrow. I believe in the human race. I believe in the warm heart. I believe in man's integrity. I believe in the goodness of a free society. And I believe that the society can remain good only as long as we are willing to fight for it and to fight against whatever imperfections may exist.